Find more State House coverage at sdpb.org.
I'll call this meeting of the Senate Local Government Committee to order. Rich, could you swing the door? Thank you. Secretary will call the roll.
Senator Gillespie.
Here.
Klochek. Miles.
Aye.
Schmidt. Thiessen.
Here.
Bradford.
Here.
Gant.
Here.
Mr. Chair, there is a quorum.
Senator Klochek mentioned he would not be able to attend the meeting today. Chair would entertain a motion to approve the minutes from the last meeting. Is there a second? It has been moved and seconded to approve the minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Motion carries. We are going to change up the calendar a little bit. First off, we're going to defer House Bill 1119 until our next meeting. And we're going to move House Bill 1139 to the top of the agenda and then take 1019 and 1020. So with that, I will ask for proponents of House Bill 1139, an act to repeal obsolete provisions relating to the discontinuance of county homes.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Representative Rich Engels, District 9, Hartford. And I've heard said in the halls of the Capitol every year I've been up here and multiple times every year that if we're going to put new laws on the books, we should consider repealing some old laws. And with that in mind, I brought about six bills this year that do just that, repealing old laws that I believe are outdated. And this is one of those bills, House Bill 1139, an act to repeal obsolete provisions relating to the discontinuance of county homes. County homes, I think, were a product of the Depression, the 1930s, and they're designed for poor relief, people who were not able to take care of themselves. There are no more county homes in South Dakota. And in fact, the remaining provisions of this particular chapter of the law, 28-15, have all been repealed, including the provisions that would allow counties to acquire property and create county homes. So there will be no more county homes. And this is the last remaining statute in that particular chapter that says what counties must do with any property remaining that they would have. And I do understand that there is some property still remaining in at least one county, possibly more counties, that is a remnant of the county home system. The statute that we would be repealing, 28-15-14, binds the hands of the county to some extent because it says that if property related to a county home is sold, the county has to use the proceeds of that property for poor relief. What we do by repealing this statute is we unshackle the counties and allow them to use the proceeds from any remaining property in any way that the county commission would see fit. So they would treat that property, after the repeal, they would treat that property just as they would any other property. So this is really a local control bill, and also it takes a statute off the books, which I think is probably a good thing for us to do occasionally.
Thank you, Representative. Are there further proponents of House Bill 1139? Further proponents? Are there any opponents? Opponents to 1139. Seeing none, we will close public testimony and open it up for committee questions and or action. Senator Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I presume that by doing this, you're describing some confidence in the economy. You presume that we're not going to have a depression like we did in the creation of this statute. That's a rhetorical question. You don't necessarily have to answer that.
I hope I don't end up in a poor home now.
Yeah. I would move do pass.
It's been moved and seconded do pass on House Bill 1139. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, say nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Senator Gillespie.
Aye.
Klochek. Miles.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Thiessen.
Aye.
Bradford.
Aye.
Gant.
Aye.
Mr. Chair, there were six yeas.
Move consent.
Second.
House Bill 1139 has passed. I have a consent motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. House Bill 1139 will go on the consent calendar. Thank you, Representative. We will now move back to the top of the calendar. House Bill 1019, an act to revise certain provisions and procedures regarding elections.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Chris Nelson, Secretary of State, this bill comes to you from my office after having been unanimously approved by the State Board of Elections. Over the course of an election cycle, we identify various statutes throughout the election code that could be improved or cleaned up, and this bill literally is a compilation of all of those changes that we've identified over the last 2 years. And I'll just go through it section by section briefly so you understand a little bit of what we're touching on. Section 1 deals with a particular filing that a candidate for county sheriff needs to file, and we're bringing the deadlines for that in alliance with the deadlines for filing their nominating petitions. Section number 2 deals with the ballot, and it's got some leftover language talking about squares and circles on the ballot, and obviously we no longer use that. We use ovals on optical scan ballots, so we're cleaning that up. Section 3 deals with, interestingly, an issue that we talked about a little bit last week in this committee, the statute that says a political party may choose to invite independents to vote in their primary. What we don't have is a deadline for the party to make that decision. And as we found out in 2008, the State Democratic Party was going to considering that decision in late March, and if they'd pulled the trigger at that point, it would have been very difficult for us to do the computer programming, et cetera, that we needed. And so we've provided what we think is a reasonable deadline for that decision to be made, and so we can respond to it if any party chooses to do that. Section 4 adds a requirement for a particular notice of vacancy in situations where and this would occur at the county level when somebody might be in the middle of their four-year term and they resign and you've got an opening for the remaining 2 years of that term. And there's a window there where, under current law, no notice is ever made to the public that this is an opening that they can run for. And this plugs that hole and provides appropriate public notice of that. Section 5, you see very little underlined or overstricken language, but there's really three different things that are going on in Section 5. This statute is basically the no campaigning at the polling place statute. And the first change that we see is on lines, page 3, lines 14 and 15. And we have a prohibition, obviously, on campaigning at the polling place for a ballot question that's on the ballot at that election. And what we're asking for is that it also be prohibited from campaigning on a ballot question that might be on the next election. And a very good example of that would be at a primary election. Under current law, literally, somebody could come in and hand out campaign flyers to every single voter relating to an issue that's going to be on the fall's November general election ballot. And we don't think that type of campaigning is appropriate within 100 feet of the entry to the polling place. Similarly, lines 16 and 17 add a prohibition on petition signature gathering. And right now, again, somebody could stand right in the entry of that polling place and collect signatures from every single person that comes in or out. And we're simply saying within that 100-feet area, that ought not be allowable. But if you want to be outside the 100 feet and collect signatures, that would be fine. And then the overstricken language on line 17, we had a prohibition against exit polling at the polling place. Unfortunately, we were sued by all of the national media outlets last spring prior to our primary. We lost that lawsuit, and federal judge says you cannot enforce that prohibition, and therefore we're asking simply remove that so that our statutes are clean. Section 6 would allow for the use of an electronic poll book. Right now, you're familiar as you come in, they check you off a voter registration list, and then they write your name in a paper poll book. There's a couple of counties that have investigated and have some interest in replacing that paper handwritten poll book with a laptop poll book. And we think that's appropriate, realizing that they will still maintain the paper registration list. So they'll check you off that paper list, and then instead of writing your name on the poll book, they'll type it into the laptop. We've got the paper backup in case the laptop crashes, so I'm comfortable that we've got the cross-check that would be needed there. Section 7 and Section 9 work together, and that's just cleaning up an inconsistency in a couple of our municipal election statutes. Section 8 says that, and this applies to municipal elections, most municipal elections are on the second Tuesday in April, but the law allows municipalities to choose an alternative date for their election, and we're simply saying if you're going to choose an alternative date, you need to have it done by January 14th so that everybody in the city knows when the city election is going to be. We've had a time or two in the past where the city's maybe tried to play a little game there as to when the election is going to be at the last minute, and we don't think that's appropriate. Section number 10 deals with if a municipality is going to put a municipal ballot question on our general election ballot in November, dealing with the timeline and giving us a little bit of flexibility there as long as it doesn't harm our ability to make the absentee ballots available on time. And Section 11 clears up an inconsistency with school petition filing deadlines. Be happy to answer questions, Mr. Chairman, when appropriate. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other proponents for House Bill 1019? Any other proponents? Are there any opponents? Can somebody get some? Or? if there are no opponents, I'll open the meeting to questions. Senator Gillespie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Just a quick question on Section 3 on the notification by the party of the intent to include the independents. Is that enough time for them to make that determination? Did you have that discussion, and did you receive any input from either of the parties about that time frame?
If I might respond, I've not talked directly with either of the parties about this deadline, but both of the parties were notified that this was on the agenda for the State Board of Elections meeting. Neither party appeared to say one way or the other. And in my mind, that kind of balances the right of the party to make the decision and the time that we need to make the computer changes to accommodate it. So in my mind, and the board was felt that that was an equitable deadline.
Senator Teasy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to clarify, Mr. Secretary, that regarding the exit polling is permitted right at the polling place now. Is that correct on the court decision?
That is correct. The court said that we could not prohibit exit polling anywhere in the polling place or at the entry to it. As we worked with the national media who sued us over this, I mean, they understand that while they can be present to do that, they cannot interfere, they cannot distract, they cannot intimidate. And so we still have all those prohibitions on the books so that if they're causing those kind of problems, we have a lever to deal with them. But we have to allow them to be there.
Just a comment, I guess, that, you know, that really, I understand it's a court ruling, but it really does seem inconsistent with the laws that we have. You know, I think people go to the polling place thinking that they have, that they're not going to be hassled, so to speak, that they don't have to put up with anybody sort of getting in their face or dealing with their issue with voting. It's kind of too bad that we prohibit everything and everybody else and all the petitions and all those sorts of things, and yet right there standing at the in the doorway of the gymnasium or whatever is a exit polling. And reflection would be that if it's the national media doing it, it's almost intimidating, and it's just by definition, I think. But thank you.
Is there any other question? If not, I have one. On the sheriff thing, and I'm not exactly where I find that, but I see some changes in his qualification. Would you kind of explain to me exactly your move in that time, aren't you?
If I might, certainly. There's a requirement that anybody that runs for county sheriff, in addition to filing their nominating petition, also has to file this letter from the Law Enforcement Standards Commission stating that they are eligible to go through law enforcement training. Not that they've had the training, but they're eligible to go through that. And the idea there is to make sure that before you put somebody on the ballot for county sheriff, that they can actually hold the office of county sheriff. They're not a felon or that type of thing. And what we found here is that the deadline for filing that nominating petition is the last Tuesday in March, but the statute that talks about filing that certification letter was the first Tuesday in April. And so before we knew whether or not we could go ahead and print the primary ballots, we'd have to wait an extra week to see whether or not this letter comes in. And we really think we ought to have both the letter and the petition at the same time so we know who's a candidate, who's not, and we can get about preparing our ballots very quickly. And that's what this is all about.
Thank you. Thank you. If there's any other question? Not. Thank you. Secretary? There are no more questions. I'll move to discussion and or action.
Move to pass. Second.
Moved by Senator Teason to pass, seconded by Senator Miles. Okay, I'll move to the do pass motion and signify by saying aye or nay.
Senator Gillespie? Oh.
Aye.
Klocek? Miles?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Teason?
Aye.
Bradford?
Aye.
Gant? Mr. Chair, there were five yeas. No nays.
House Bill 1019 will go to the floor. Do pass. Move to consent. Okay. Move to consent by Senator Teason.
I'm going to oppose that.
And I think that's okay. We because in the absence of two members, we might should let it have some discussion. So we'll go to the floor. Do pass. Maybe Senator Teason, do you want to carry that on the floor? Yeah. I think we'll take House Bill 1020. We'll move to House Bill 1020. Are there any proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Chris Nelson, Secretary of State. This bill deals with a couple areas in the campaign finance law that we've identified over the last couple of years that should be cleaned up and some improvements that we think we can make. And I'll take this section by section also. Section 1 deals with who and what committees have to file campaign finance reports when. And you'll see a lot of overstrikes and underscores. Most of that is simply to make this statute easier to read. There are two substantive changes, and those are found on page 2, lines 19 through 22. And what you're finding here are the exceptions, the folks that do not need to file a campaign finance report at certain times. And we're adding two more exceptions to that list. And the first one on line 19 and 20 is a ballot question committee prior to a primary election. And here's the scenario. If you've got a ballot question on the general election ballot, you're already required to file what's called a mid-year report the 1st of July. Under our current law, you also have to file a pre-primary report before the primary election, which is just a month sooner than that. And that pre-primary report really serves no purpose because it's not pertinent to the primary election. And a month later, you have to file this mid-year report. And so what we're simply saying is if you're that ballot question committee, you don't need to file a pre-primary report. Just file that mid-year and then obviously the report that you file prior to the general election. We think that's a common sense exception. And then secondly, on lines 21 and 22, we're saying that if you're a campaign committee and you're not on the general election ballot, you don't need to file a pre-general report. A very typical example of that would be a candidate competes in a primary election. They lose the primary election, so they're not on the general. There's no reason for them to file a pre-general report. They're going to file a report at the year end to show the rest of their activity, but filing it prior to the general makes no sense. And frankly, my office doesn't need any more reports in that week prior to the general election. I said that on Kia's behalf. And so we have a somewhat of a selfish interest in making sure that line passes. I'd also like to look at Section 3, and this deals with the whole issue of ballot question committees and who is and is not a ballot question committee. And we have a definition of ballot question committee, and it talks about the fact that if you're an organization, a corporation, profit, nonprofit, doesn't matter, but if you use your treasury funds to make a donation for a ballot question, you haven't collected or received them, you're just using your regular treasury funds, that you're not a ballot question committee and you don't have to fill out a ballot question committee report. The problem we have is nowhere do we actually define what treasury funds are. And so this is simply adding that particular definition to the statute, so it's very clear what we're talking about. Lastly, I'd like to finish with Section 2. And I will tell you, Section 2, I almost offered to you as a policy choice on behalf of the legislature. As you're aware, we implemented a $50 per day penalty for the late filing of campaign finance reports. That has been a definite incentive for getting reports filed on time. Unfortunately, we still have some folks, both candidates and committees, that don't get them filed on time, and we are levying those particular penalties. One of the things that we found last year is that with county political parties, and some of these are parties that may handle $100 or $200 a year or less, small amounts of money. They have volunteers that are doing their finance reports. Sometimes these are elderly folks. Matter of fact, we talked to one county party treasurer the other day who is 91 years old, and bless her heart, probably been doing this for her whole life, and she missed the deadline and got a significant penalty. And there's a hearing opportunity, and they can ask for some relief through that hearing, and we've had a number of those. But what I'm suggesting here is perhaps for those county political parties, we maybe right-size the penalty at $10 a day as opposed to $50 a day. And on the House side, they had a good discussion over that. And frankly, the House local government committee was split, whether this ought to stay in the bill or come out. And it was a good discussion, but they decided, yep, let's leave that in and provide a little relief for those folks. And so I offer that to you as kind of a policy decision on what the legislature thinks is appropriate. With that, Mr. Chairman, be happy to answer questions when appropriate.
Are there any other proponents for House Bill 1020? Seeing none, are there any opponents to House Bill? And if there are no opponents, I'll open it to discussion and questions. Senator Teason.
Well, as long as they discussed it in the House, we might as well discuss it a little bit here. $10 a day penalty is pretty minimal, so I guess my mind is going to think what would a county party do, and in what situations might they intentionally delay their filing and be willing to pay $10 a day, which is pretty inconsequential. And so I don't know if you can help with that thought process a little bit. I'm a little new to the county party politics game. So,
Senator, that's a good question. And I can tell you that all of the county parties that we've dealt with in the penalty situations over both the pre-general and the year-end, I don't think any of them were necessarily intentional. It was treasurers that got caught up in the events of life and that type of thing and were delinquent because of that. But could I see somebody abusing this if you're one of the larger county parties and you specifically don't want to report prior to an election that you were giving a rather large contribution to, you know, one of the fine senators running, you know, in your county, perhaps they'd make a calculated decision and say, yep, we'll pay the $10 as opposed to publicly reporting this before the election. And so that thought process could go on. I don't deny that at all.
Any other questions? Senator Gillespie?
Along those lines, Mr. Secretary, maybe you could tell us how many counties were delinquent, first of all, and then just as for the in the interest of efficiency, you know, ballpark, if you know, I'm not looking for a perfect amount, Mr. Secretary. And then I guess if you did see those abuses, I presume that you would come back and perhaps we would need to reconsider the legislation if it passes in this manner.
Senator, I'm not sure I can give you a definite number of the county parties. There were three that went through the hearing process, but there were others that simply said, yeah, we're guilty. We have no good excuse. We'll just write you the check. And of those three that went through the hearing process, they all had issues that I took into account, and we did, in fact, reduce their fine to something that I thought was an appropriate level given the low or no activity that committee actually had. So far as if I start to see abuses, yes, I would certainly come back and ask for something different, and I'd hope that wouldn't happen.
Are there any other questions? I have one. I wonder if you could lower that for candidates, too.
Mr. Chairman, that's a great question, and I think they might even have hinted at that on the House side, too. I would oppose that simply because the candidates are handling significant amounts of money in most cases, and folks are very definitely interested in their campaign finances, and so we want to make sure that those are, in fact, filed on time.
I want to thank you. I know what that $50 day penalty is. So
again, I wasn't pointing any fingers at anybody.
yes. Thank you. Well, if there are no more questions, we'll move to discussion and or action.
Mr. Chairman, move to pass.
Senator Glaston moves to pass. Second by Senator Morrow. Discussion? Any discussion? Senator Teague.
Just a little one. I've been thinking about the party, the county party filing thing, and I can't see a situation. I mean, even if the county party did, you know, write me a check for a couple thousand dollars, I would presume people would expect that's what county parties do with their money to their candidates. I mean, it's a little different than, I don't think that would be as interesting a reading in your disclosure report as, you know, who else gave you money and where did your money come from. I don't see that as a logical, I guess, logical transaction that's going to take place, and so I guess I'm okay with the lesser fine for it. Thank you.
Thank you. One thing I understand the problem of the 91-year-old lady, I guess, is because sometimes, I know in our case, our county organizations are pretty weak, and there's not very much money in there in the first place. Probably even $10 a day might be a hardship for a county that maybe raises only $100 in the first place and doesn't give to candidates, really. But I'm sure the obligation doesn't leave for those organizations. They have to do it, too. So, and in their case, I would I like the fact that they can ask the secretary for a hearing, so they can discuss that. And I'm sure he's very, very helpful in that. I know he has been to me in these kind of cases. With that, I will ask the secretary to call the roll.
Senator Gillespie?
Aye.
Klocek? Miles?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Thiessen?
Aye.
Bradford?
Aye.
Gant?
Aye.
Mr. Chair, there were 6 yeas, no nays.
Move due pass on 10:20 to go to the floor due pass. I think we'll just leave it off of consent. Anytime you have a bill of, I think, dealing with our finances and stuff, I think we ought to discuss it. Thank you. I'll pass the gavel to the real chairman here.
Thank you, Senator Bradford. I'm really giving you a workout this year. I'm going to have to start apologizing.
He deserves it too, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
I see some of you got that joke.
Thank you, Senator Gladys.
Seeing nothing more to come before the committee, the chair would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
I would also thank you. We have an adjourned motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. We are adjourned.